This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. The last time they were with us, we'd also just had some unusually warm weather. But that was back near the end of winter, when most people were thrilled with the effect unseasonable temperatures were having on their gardens. The more recent spate of heat, maybe not such a good thing for green thumbers. But as always, when Dave and Guinevere are here, we'll take whatever gardening questions you have. Whether they're weed, shade, soil, pest, or heat-related, or something completely different. Got any type of gardening question with which you could use a hand? Organic gardening consultant Guinevere Higgins and organic farming specialist David O'Neill will start handing out answers right after the news. Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Gardening is our focus today. 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. Gardening advisors Guinevere Higgins and Dave O'Neill are back. And if you get your call in early, they might just be able to help you resolve whatever pesky problem has cropped up on your plot of land. That phone number again, 888-WMRA-TALK, translates in all numbers to 888-967-2825. Dave, Guinevere, great to see you again.
You
Thanks
too, Tom.
Thanks for having us back.
So what's hot?
Oh, it's...
Sorry, couldn't resist.
The weather's
the
hot,
two,
Tom.
I see the two of you and I have absolutely no impulse control.
that was quite a heat wave.
Yeah, the garden gets hot. The gardeners get hot.
Mm-hmm. And, can't have too much water.
Yeah, definitely.
But this little spell of cooler, drier weather has been super, super, super nice. We've been taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I really am impressed when we think of mid to high 80s as cool weather.
Feels great.
But in terms of impact on plants or pests or problems in the garden, is there something in particular that goes on when you've got several days above 100 degrees, let alone what we're expecting again for the rest of the summer for this kind of weather to be coming back every once in a while?
Sure. Plants can get stressed, heat stress, just like gardeners can get heat stress. And they have different responses to that. But once they get too much sunlight, too much heat, they dry out, their leaves will start to wilt. They're trying to conserve energy and not evapotranspirate any more than they have to. So
it isn't just a matter of them having enough water. There's something else you have to do?
Well, there's no water left for them oftentimes, no water in the soil. And that's the most important place. I mean, the roots needs access to moisture to keep plants healthy and growing. So irrigation, supplemental irrigation is key for gardening in the hot 100 degree type of weather we're having.
And it's not just about the plants drying out and wilting and eventually they will die if they don't get water, but it's also when plants get stressed like that, they become they basically become more apparent to the pests that might happen to chance by. So a stressed plant is going to look a lot tastier to a bug than a nice, happy, healthy plant. It's actually that happy, healthy plant is going to be a little more invisible to that pest, whereas a stressed plant is going to be screaming out. So oftentimes you can end up with sort of this multiplier effect of more issues with your plants than just the heat.
So do I understand from what David was saying, Guinevere, that it's simply a matter of making sure there's enough moisture in the soil?
Absolutely.
And then how do we keep that moisture in the soil?
Yeah, what are the strategies?
Yeah, it's just so hot. And it's a high summer sun, so there's, you know, almost 14 hours of daylight. There's a long time window of sunlight and the heat that goes with it. One thing we do on the farm is we do a lot of mulching. Almost every garden bed has mulch on it. Mulch meaning any kind of organic matter that's piled up on top of the soil. There's a lot of benefits for mulch. The number one in this case is it helps keep moisture down in the soil and it helps minimize loss from evaporation.
And ensuring that your soil has sufficient levels of organic matter is also really important. And your mulch will help do that too as it breaks down, adds organic matter to the soil. And that organic matter functions like a sponge. And it holds water in the soil where your plants need it.
We have a whole bunch of questions already on our Facebook page. We're just starting to get some calls in, but we still have a few lines open at 888-WMRA. Talk 888-967-2825. Let's get to some of these Facebook questions that came in early. This is from Crystal, who says, we got chickens this year to get the ticks in our yard. We let them roam our yard all day and pen them up at night through the predators. But now we're wondering how we can safely and effectively use the chickens' manure in our garden.
Great question. And kudos.
You're the chicken expert, aren't you?
It's my alter ego, is the crazy chicken lady of Charlottesville. So kudos to Crystal for getting chickens. They're wonderful and a great addition to having a garden. And they absolutely will help keep the ticks down. So that's a great strategy. As far as using the manure, that's another benefit of having chickens, not just the eggs and the entertainment value, but it's also what they add to your garden soil. The best way to ensure that you're using their manure safely, which is an excellent soil amendment, is to compost it. So if you're regularly cleaning out your chicken coop, cleaning out those droppings, put them on your compost pile. Let them compost for, I would say, 60 days, ensure there's no pathogen issues there, and then spread it on your garden.
Yeah, that sounds great.
We have a mental health question from Catherine, who says, am I crazy? Or are there a lot more bugs out this year? I've never had such a problem.
Well, I think we talked about this in our winter show, that when we have mild winters, we typically have more pest populations that overwinter and make it through the winter, and there's a high likelihood of more pest damage because of that, because of a mild winter. So, Catherine, you're not crazy.
Well, not at least as far as her noticing more bugs.
But in my experience this summer, we haven't had a lot of pest damage above and beyond other years. It's been an average pest year for us. I don't know. She didn't mention what type of pest or what plants she was having problems with. This time of year, we tend to have squash bugs and cucumber beetles. Their populations tend to increase from May to June to July. And other bugs like flea beetles, which are very small beetles, which affect most broccoli family plants, tend to peak in July, their populations. And most bugs overwinter in the soil. One strategy that we've used in the past is to break those overwintering pest populations with chickens. Chickens love protein. They'll scratch and peck, and not only will they eat ticks, but they'll eat a lot of grubs and bugs and overwintering pests.
So chickens in the wintertime mm-hmm. help a lot. Chickens now won't necessarily hurt, but
they would hurt quite a bit, actually. A chicken in a garden is a terrible thing because they will destroy a garden. And, of course, as we talked about earlier, the safest way to ensure that you're going to get adequate nutrition from that chicken manure is to make sure it's is composted first. So another reason to run your chickens through the garden in the off season.
Yeah.
Thank you, Catherine and Crystal, both. Organic gardening specialist Dave O'Neill is co-owner of the Radical Roots Community Farm in Kieseltown. Organic gardening specialist Guinevere Higgins is co-owner of the Charlottesville-based gardening consulting firm Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Phone number 888-WMRA. Talk in Dale Enterprise and use that number to call in. And thanks for doing that. Your question or comment, please.
Oh, yes. I want to know if it's time to start watering trees. I've got a maple tree in my front yard, one of a pair. The one that's in the sort of open alleyway with the western wind has a lot of dead leaves on it. The other one, not nearly so much. Looks pretty good. And they're side by side, except there for the access to the western wind.
So watering is a big question. When it's this hot, and my general rule of thumb on the farm is that we water up to 1 inch a week. So if we get 1 inch of rain that week, we don't water at all. And if we get anything less, we water up to about 1 inch a week. That's our rate.
Are you watering full-grown trees?
We are watering our orchard at this time.
You are?
Sure. We're watering all our apple trees, pear trees, all our brambles and berries. when it's hot and dry like this. When it's a really mature, established tree, they have deep anchored roots. They can definitely bridge over a longer dry spell. But you have to be careful because once you've stressed that trees, you can have other effects that you don't want. Anything you see above ground on a tree, 90% of the time, it's directly relates with a root problem. So the above ground signs that you're seeing is just a symptom of a deeper root problem. So a lot of times, it doesn't hurt to water it. You know, even if it's a established mature tree, give it water maybe even before you think it needs it.
And also nice deep mulching with organic materials like composted wood chips is a good idea for a tree that's ailing. Make sure it's got enough nutrients and it's going to keep whatever water you're giving it, keep it in the ground.
Thanks for your call, Ann.
Yes, thanks.
Next, upstate New York, Gene, thank you for calling in. Your question or comment. Gene, if you've got your radio turned on in the background, if you could turn that down. And we're wondering if you have a question for Guinevere or Dave.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Yeah, I'm wondering if plugs are a viable alternative to grass seed.
Plugs of grass instead of seed?
Yeah, instead of grass seed, you use plugs and plug them all over your lawn. Is that a viable alternative to planting grass seed?
Grass seed is really hard this time of the year. It's definitely probably best to wait till fall. Early spring is another great time to get broadcast seed, grass seed established.
I do see people occasionally just, you know, like toss some seed on some bare areas of their lawn and then water it a lot this time of year. You're saying that's not such a good idea.
It's
pretty resource intensive because you got to keep it watered.
You got to keep it watered.
And it's just going to be that much harder for those
little
plants.
So what are the questions about plugs? I'm not familiar with plugs.
Plugs, but I'm assuming you're meaning small transplants in a 1-inch by 2-inch deep.
Like pieces of sod?
Transplant.
Well, plugs that they'll sell so many plugs for, say, $25, maybe 100 or 200 plugs, and they claim it will spread out through your lawn.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that can work. The plug is already established. It's already a healthy, live, growing plant. So it has some resources. It's gotten a jump start. That can work, and it's probably a little bit better this time of the year than just trying to start from seed.
But even plugs are better in the fall or the spring?
It's going to be easier. You're not going to have to manage it quite as intensely and keep your eye on things in the fall or the spring because you get cooler temperatures, you get more consistent rain. So those are the reasons why timely seeding. But if you have bare ground and you're afraid it's going to erode, and stick some plugs in, maybe even light mulching, straw mulch lightly over top of it, and then set your irrigation on a timer.
Gene, thanks so much for your question. 888-WMRA Talk, 888-967-2825. If you have a gardening or any other kind of plant issue you'd like to discuss with Dave O'Neill and Guinevere Higgins, next to Charlottesville, Terry, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
My problem is that I have a lovely azalea bed in front of my house, but my neighbor feeds the feral cats and they think it's kitty box. I have bought the usual things and nothing seems to work. Have you any suggestions to keep the cats out?
The perennial feral cat problem. I've encountered this problem before, and actually it's one of the top questions I get from people. So the best way you can help eliminate that problem is to just do whatever you can, whether it's a small fence or get a dog, I don't know, but something to actually just repel and physically prevent the cats from actually getting into your beds. I mean, that's probably the best thing. The one good thing is that you're not trying to grow edible plants there, so otherwise that would be a bigger problem. But is it discoloring your azalea plants? Is that the problem, or is it just the smell and the
constant digging around them apparently makes them die eventually.
Huh.
And I'm assuming it's the feces and the urine that are being deposited that they don't, the azalea plants don't like.
Dave O'Neill, I know you have something you want to say. I can tell by the look on your face you have something you want to say.
No, it's a tough one.
Well, we've got to pause for the break. So, Terry, can you hold on? And we'll finish up with our responders to your question in just a bit more than 1 minute. Organic gardening advisor and operator of the Radical Roots Community Farm in Keesletown, David O'Neill, is one of our guests on this edition of Virginia Insight. Sitting next to him, another organic gardening specialist, Guinevere Higgins. She runs Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest, a gardening consulting firm based in Charlottesville. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and we've still got Terry and her cat problem with part two of our answer coming from Dave O'Neill.
The only thing I could come up with, Terry, was looking at the texture of the garden bed there. I know cats are really specific about where they like to do their business, and if you could do some top dressing with a really chunky, heavier wood chip mulch, that might be another deterrent, as well as Guinevere's small, attractive garden fence.
Unfortunately, that doesn't work. They're very climbing cats. They climb right over it. And I tried some chicken wire making in kind of a dome over it.
Well, wait a minute. Let me see if I understand. You're saying the kind of mulch that you use, David, you're saying that if it's particularly chunky, the cats might not like to use that as a kind of cat litter because they're used to something smaller and more granule.
Yeah, oftentimes they like very fine, loose, light textured areas.
So, Terry, have you tried any really chunky, heavy-duty mulch type stuff?
Yes.
And that didn't work either?
No, it didn't. They don't seem to care since they're feral cats. It's not like they're coming from being accustomed to a litter box.
And how do you feel about dogs?
I am unable to have a dog.
So part of the problem here is that her neighbor is feeding the cats. I don't know if there's a conversation that should take place with a neighbor, or maybe another neighbor who has dogs and ask him to, you know, bring the dogs over once in a while. Terry, I'm afraid that's the best that we can do for now. But if there's anybody listening who has dealt with this problem and has a suggestion, we're going to invite them to call as well. So please listen just in case we get that wise listener calling us with the solution that we haven't found yet. Phone number 888-967-2825. Thank you so very much. Here we have Chris on our Facebook page who says, I have a small container on my deck with two basil plants. It gets a half day's worth of sun, midday to evening. I purchased young plants, not grown from seed. The leaves are all okay, but they are yellowing, not drying up and browning, but yellowing. Do you have an idea of what the problem is? Can I recover these plants? Will the basil return to normal?
The answer is most likely yes. Container growing can be challenging because anything grown in a container is going to get a lot hotter and a lot drier more quickly than something that's planted in the ground. So with container gardening, you really have to make sure that you are keeping up with the watering and also keeping up with providing nutrients, because the poor little plant, all they've got is what you've given them in their potting mix. So I usually recommend planting about 50-50 potting mix and bagged compost. And that's a great way to ensure that your plants are getting nutrients. Maybe every other week watering with fish emulsion is another good way to ensure that your plants are going to get enough nutrients.
Watering with fish emulsion. Could you explain that,
please? Fish emulsion is a wonderful sort of low-dose organic fertilizer. It's a byproduct of the fishing industry. Doesn't smell too good, but it is a wonderful fertilizer. It's a broad-spectrum fertilizer. It's going to capture a lot of minerals, trace minerals, and also your sort of standard NPK.
So this isn't where you cut up your leftover fish
dinner?
No,
it's something you could buy at the feed store, okay. at the garden supply center. So go ahead and pick some of that up, water with fish emulsion, and you might actually, you know, midsummer about now, you might want to top dress with a little additional compost just to make sure that your plants have what they need. And it should bounce back.
Yep. Is there a reason for the yellowing?
One idea I had just from his comment was he gets a lot of afternoon sun. It might be really intense afternoon sun, especially on a balcony or where there's reflected light off of a wall. And I know on the farm we've had sun scald affect our basil leaves, and that was in the high tunnel in April. We thought it was some kind of disease. We sent it off to extension. We were like, what is this? And they came back with sunburn. And we're like, oh, well, we need to vent the high tunnel more. You just get more airflow and air circulation. You know, mid-afternoon sun can be very intense.
So could he angle an umbrella near his basil and it would get a little less sun?
No. You know, that's the sun he has to deal with. And we do a lot with shading on the farm. We use shade cloth to grow lettuces through the summer. We use sunflowers to shade other crops. So some plants can benefit from a little bit more shade, especially from afternoon sun. But as Guinevere said, yes, basil can take heavy pruning or heavy cutting back, and it will resprout and keep growing.
I hear there's a possibility that in Nelson County, there's a gentleman named Harry who may have a solution to cat problems. Harry, thank you for calling in.
Well, you're welcome. I've had some cat problems in the past, and one sort of like chicken wire, or if they're really persistent, rat wire, and you could staple it right over top of the mulch, just cut around, you know, so that it's not rubbing on the stem of the plant. And when they can't scratch through it, they won't mess with it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Harry, thanks so much for calling in.
You betcha.
Another call from Nelson County. This is Stephen. Stephen, you're on the air with gardening advisors Guinevere Higgins and Dave O'Neill.
Hello, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have a row of thornless blackberries that this year is their third year, and they've started to produce really well, but we've gotten infested with mites. The berries don't form fully. They have these red bulbs on them. They partially form. And I looked it up, and it says they have mites.
Huh.
And I was wondering, is there a way to deal with this that you know of?
I've not heard of that problem before, but oftentimes with the little tiny critter problems like that, spraying with some kind of horticultural oil can be helpful, a neem oil or dormant oil. Oftentimes that's done in the cool season. But if you've got a pest infestation now, that might help. It might not mean
those,
that.
Repeat those, please. A neem?
Neem oil. It's an organic strategy
and
for.
It's spelled?
N-E-E-M. Yep.
N-E-E-M.
Neem oil. N-E-E-M.
And the other kind?
N-E-E-M.
Dormant oil or horticultural oil. And it basically smothers pests.
Okay.
Would you recommend putting that on now, though, Dave?
Huh?
You can still use it in the summertime. Be sure to use it in the cool part of the day, when the sun's not out and hot. Neem is organic. We use it on our farm, and we're certified organic. You still have to be careful with it. It is an insecticide. It's a very gentle one, but it can affect honeybees and other non-target beneficials as well as pests.
Now, would you put this on at any time during the season, or is this something that, because they're already infected and they won't, you know, I don't think they'll ever come back from this season.
Right. It sounds like you maybe have lost your crop this year, but yeah. I would say go ahead and spray it on now to salvage the plants for the following season.
For the following season. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for your advice.
You're welcome. And those thornless blackberries, man, they are good.
Oh, I love them. Big as my thumb.
Stephen, thanks so very much for your call. 888-967-2825 is how to reach us by phone. You can remember that as 888-WMRA-TALK. We're also taking questions on Facebook, where our page is listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. In Albemarle, Hugh is calling in. Hugh, your question or comment for Dave and or Guinevere, please.
Well, actually, my question follows exactly from that question. I've been gardening for over 50 years, and I'm pretty knowledgeable of gardening, but I've only been keeping bees for a couple of years. And I'm curious about using neem to spray my tomatoes and eggplant and all of that, and also my bees. You know, I don't want to, my beehives are about 40 yards away from my vegetable garden. And what I've been doing is spraying neem on a warm evening when it's not likely to have a lot of dew, but spraying my garden, you know, around 8 or 8:30 when the bees are largely no longer foraging and sort of congregating on the landing pad of the hive. But I just want to get some reassurance that maybe this is the right way to go, or maybe it isn't. You know, there's so much colony collapse disorder now that I'm worried about that. So what do y'all think about vegetable gardening and beekeeping and managing your vegetable garden at the same time?
Hugh, that's a great comment, and I think I'm a new beekeeper as well. We've had bees for a couple seasons, and we've lost a few hives, and it is really tricky. There's so many different reasons for hives not to be strong and thrive. But they're great in the garden. I mean, we want bees, and backyard beekeeping is a great strategy to help strengthen the bees. So yes, keep bees in the garden. We like to have one hive per acre of mixed vegetables. But even in the city, we can have bees. As far as using neem, neem is probably the most gentle of any of the insecticides, and it sounds like you've been very thoughtful about when the bees are out and busy and limiting that exposure, and I think that's a good strategy. So that's what we do on our farm is really try to consider all the different variables and when the bees would be flying and when to use neem and when not to.
So you think that the strategy that he's using currently is okay, there won't be enough residue left over to hurt the bees at some other time.
Right. Neem is effective, but it doesn't linger or have a lot of residue to it. So I think being sensitive about when the bees are flying is important.
Hugh, does that sound like it will help?
Yeah, that's a good answer. I appreciate it. I recently saw a movie called Vanishing Bees, which the Central Virginia Beekeepers Association encouraged us to watch at the Charlottesville Main Library, and it's just pretty tragic what's happening with all of the bare chemical and neonicotinoid farming that's going on. We're going to be in a lot of trouble if we lose our bees.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being so careful.
Supply will be absolutely threatened. Mm-hmm. So I think more people need to keep bees just to have more people doing it. The movie talked about how it'd be better for 40 people to have one hive than one person to have 40 hives. Not that we don't want commercial beekeepers. They're very important people. But I appreciate your answer. Thanks for the help.
Hugh, thanks for your call. To you who are listening, we do not normally report rumors, but this one may be too good to pass up. And there actually is some evidence to support that this might be true. Anyway, rumor is that one of the spouses of today's guest wants to challenge everyone listening to see if you can come up with a question that absolutely stumps their spouse. I'm trying
it's
to
not my spouse.
Circumspect
that
here.
Would be
well,
me.
No, you just gave it away. If you have a gardening question that you think might stump either of our guests, please do call in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825.
Tom, she stumps me all the time at home. I don't
Next to Mount Solon, Linda, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
Hello!
Yes, I have some suggestions for the lady with her cat problem.
Okay.
I have cats myself, and I'm an avid gardener, so take care of that.
We're waiting for the suggestions.
Well, I have several suggestions. One thing that you can get if you have a garden center, they have little twist ties or sprinkles that you can put around your plants to keep animals away. It works pretty good. You look for the ones that recommend it for cats. Also, you can go to your local barber or hairdresser and ask them to save you a bag of hair. You put the hair inside knee-high pantyhose and tie it shut and lay it around your plants. This not only works for cats, dogs, I found it works for dogs, deer, most anything. They don't like the smell of human hair. Also, cats are very drawn to the scent of pine. It smells like their own urine. So if she is using pine-based mulch, she may consider changing it to some other type. And then if you really get desperate and don't mind doing it, there is an electric fence charger that is made especially for pets such as dogs and cats that she could put around there. It just emits a small shock. Some people don't agree with that, but it does work in some cases. I hope these suggestions have helped her, and it's been a pleasure listening to you guys.
Linda, thank you so much for that nice, long, helpful list.
Yeah, those were great suggestions.
Absolutely.
Sorry it was so long.
No,
oh,
that's,
no
they're all good.
Terrific. We were talking about bees and, bees a little while ago. So this is from Lauren on Facebook, who has a different problem. She says, I live in an apartment with a second floor balcony. I have not been able to find any hives nearby. but there are far more bees and wasps flying in and out and around the balcony than in years past. I don't currently have any plants on the balcony, but I am wondering if there might be some I could put out that the wasps wouldn't like so they would stay away?
A lot of people get confused between bees, wasps, honeybees. There's so many different kinds of wasps out there. And if she's seeing more this year, yes, they might have adopted a new home. A lot of times they won't make it through the winter. Some different wasps do build up populations over time, though. As far as deterring them with plant material, I can't think of really smelly, bad-smelling plants.
Well, there are plants. There are aromatic plants that will help deter flying pests like mosquitoes and the like. And I'm thinking of scented geraniums and dill and mint and even basil.
Scented geraniums was one of them.
Yes.
And then dill.
Dill, mint. Gosh, citronella. I mean, there's lots of lemon verbena. I mean, anything that has a really nice scent. And luckily for us, they tend to smell really nice. But to a mosquito, oftentimes they're repellent.
I don't know if they're repellent to wasps.
Wormwood is another one. Artemisia is another one that's supposed to be helpful in keeping pests away. But typically, when you're seeing wasps, I mean, unless you have an allergy or unless you're coming into contact with them and you really think you might get stung, you've got small children, oftentimes that's a really good sign, especially if you're a gardener, because, I mean, I have the coolest picture of a wasp just tearing into this cabbage worm. And I was so thrilled to see this happening because here we had this cabbage worm problem and Mother Nature was kind of taking care of it for us. So I was so happy to see that wasp, and that wasp could care less about me. I was getting in there and taking pictures of it and it didn't care. It was having a really nice meal. So when you see wasps and you see bees, oftentimes these are pollinators or they are taking care of pesky problems within your garden sort of ecology. So we want to encourage the presence of wasps.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for your question. I don't know if we solved the problem, but we certainly did learn something about how to keep mosquitoes away. So you prompted that. Next to Charlottesville, Jimmy, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for organic gardening advisors Dave O'Neill and or Guinevere Higgins, please.
Thank you. It seems like the stink bug population has really gone down a lot in the last couple of years, and that's great. And I was wondering if you've heard any theories about why.
I have not heard any theories about why, although I had the same thought the other day, Jimmy, just like, man, there really aren't as many stink bugs around as there have been.
Well, they've been predicted to be the next big thing, right? Because there's no natural predators. There are a few, you know, beneficials out there that will take them to town. but you know, there needs to be a time lag period for an ecological balance to be reached, and I don't know if we've gotten to that window, or why your observation is that you've seen less. I mean, I've seen less this year too, come to think of it.
So it's a mystery. And we were talking about wasps, Jimmy. Several months ago, we had some researchers who were working on stink bugs. One of the things they mentioned is that the USDA at a special facility in New Jersey is working with little tiny wasps from China that are the natural predators of the kind of black marmalated stink bug that has been such a problem because it's originally from China. But as far as we know, they haven't finished their research yet. Those little tiny wasps that feed on the stink bug haven't been released. So it's a mystery that maybe somebody else in the audience has a theory about, and we'd be happy to hear from you if you do or if you have any other questions, suggestions, or comments about gardening. Jimmy, thanks so much for your call. We'll be back in just about a minute. Organic gardening specialist David O'Neill is co-owner of the Radical Roots Community Farm in Keezeltown. Organic gardening specialist Guinevere Higgins is co-owner of the Charlottesville-based gardening consulting firm Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest. They're here to address your questions about anything to do with gardening, or if you've ever come across a solution that you think other people would love to hear about dealing with a particular gardening problem, we'd love to hear from you about that as well. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. We have a Martha question on our Facebook page. Some people may recognize. We don't usually use last names of Facebook posters, but since this is a special person, we will admit that this came in from Martha Woodruff, who says, I've got glorious cantaloupe plants with beauteous flowers that are not turning into melons. Why help?
Well, the problem might be that Martha just needs to sit tight and wait a little longer, because melon plants, cucumber plants have, you know, squash plants, a lot of these plants have both male and female flowers. And Martha might be seeing the male flowers, which tend to be a little bigger, a little showier, very beauteous. But
so this is a sex issue.
This is the birds and the bees right here. So it could be that her female plants just haven't yet been pollinated, or have just been pollinated and haven't yet produced that little tiny baby melon, which is so cute. So just sit tight, Martha. I think if your plants are happy and healthy, if you've got good beneficial pollinators flying about, then you should be doing just fine. Just give it a little while and you should see those little baby melons pop up.
Is it possible that there could be something going on with the heat that's keeping things from happening as well? Or is it just that she's seeing male flowers and the females aren't ready to show themselves yet?
It's possible there could be heat stress causing some kind of problem, a secondary issue like blossom drop. But hopefully she's done some irrigation. And one thing that I should mention about irrigation is the most conservative, efficient way to irrigate. We use drip irrigation on the farm, and that's usually underneath mulch or organic material. And a lot of times we drip at night. So minimizing our evapotranspiration losses is really important. So overhead, you have to be careful with, because a huge percentage of the water that you're using when you're overhead irrigating, you're losing just through the air and through evaporating. It doesn't never get to the plant where you want it.
And the other thing I'll mention about irrigation and about watering in general is, oftentimes people have this idea that watering your plant means going and standing out there and spraying the hose right on your plant. Well, you really want to put the water where the plant needs it. The plant really doesn't need it on its leaves or on its fruit. Where it needs it is at its roots. And actually, you can sometimes be doing more harm than good by getting the entire plant wet, because we are prone here in our region, because we have high heat and high humidity, to fungal diseases which thrive in moisture. So the more you can minimize your plant actually getting wet, the more you're going to help reduce your chances.
You want the soil wet.
You want the soil wet and not the plant. So sometimes it means bending down or getting a nice long wand to put on the end of your hose, which eliminates the need for bending over to water your plants. It's a wonderful back-saving strategy. But the absolute best, what Dave's talking about, is the drip irrigation, because it's the most efficient.
We have somebody here who has far more horticultural knowledge than I, including her lexicon. And I'm hoping that this is a word that you guys can tell me how to pronounce. Tiffany has posted this question on Facebook, and the word she's used is spelled C-U-C-U-R-B-I-T-S.
Cucurbits.
Thank you very much. Two of our beautiful cucurbits have shriveled up and died this year.
Uh-oh.
Parenthesis, the yellow squash had six beautiful fruits, which made me want to weep, end parenthesis. So I'm guessing cucurbits are somehow related to squash.
Yes.
The problem was not lack of water. Could this be caused by cucumber beetles? I know that the spraying of neem and this pyrethrins is considered an organic way to control them, but I'm wondering, is there a way to support the plants that helps them to be more resistant to cucumber beetles?
Well, a cucurbit is any plant in the squash family. So that could be a butternut squash, it could be Martha's melons, it could be Tiffany's yellow squash, zucchini.
Cucumbers.
I feel so educated now. No wonder I listen to NPR.
It's a big, happy plant family there.
Cucurbitaceae.
Yes, love it. Lots of great fruit coming from that family. One suspect I might think of when I heard that they kind of just died quickly would be squash borers, which is an interstem pest. It'll eat away inside the stem, and it'll appear as if your nice, big, healthy plant died almost overnight. And it's a problem. It's hard to deal with. The way we deal with it on the farm is by using floating row cover, which is a white spunbound polyester sheet on top of the squash. We will typically direct seed or transplant our squash and then put the white row cover over the plants, and that acts as an exclusion method where the squash borers and the cucumber beetles can't find the cucurbit family plant that they love to eat. We typically take those covers off when the plant's in flowers so that we can get the pollinators in there. Unless it's a dioecious cucumber, which means it's self-fruitful, all the other cucurbit family plants need to have pollinators in there. So try floating row cover. One other technique or strategy would be to do lots of rotations. So that would mean planting squash plants more than once. On our farm, we plant them 7 different times, each separated 3 weeks apart, so that we have a continuous harvesting supply of squash starting at the end of May and going all the way through October. So that's another strategy to try.
Next, we're going to Batesville. Claire, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for gardening advisors Guinevere Higgins and or Dave O'Neill, please.
Yes, I just have a very simple comment. I have 100% organic flowers, spices, herbs, and gardens. And for about 40 years, I've not had any trouble with, you know, Japanese beetles or deer in the hostas or anything, in spite of the fact that I live in a very remote area. I simply use baby talcum powder. I buy it at the Dollar Tree. For a dollar, you get 20-some ounces. And instead of using chemicals on my plants, I use baby talcum powder. I guess if it's good enough for a baby's butt and healthy enough, it's okay for the plants. And
not a bad rule of thumb?
I don't have any varmints. You know, eating my plants, squash or you know, the beautiful dahlias at this point, hostas, everything that's growing. And it has worked for me. So if I could pass that along, that would be great.
Well, it's always good to hear what strategies work for people. And, you know, everyone's got something that works for them. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you so very much.
It's my pleasure. Bye-bye.
On Facebook, this is from Eugene, who says, I have some cedar trees around my property that have what I found out was apple cider rust, little spongy starfish-like growths. My question is, the small apple trees that I planted this year, how can I protect them? Can I even grow Macintosh apples with this stuff showing up on the cedar trees?
So he's talking about cedar apple rust, but apple cider rust, that sounds interesting. So cedar apple rust is
actually, he said apple cedar rust.
There you go. Yeah, cedar apple rust or apple cedar rust, whichever way you want to say it is, is endemic here because we have so many cedar trees. It is an issue if you want to grow apples. I've heard a rule of thumb is give your apples 100 feet from the nearest cedar tree, but I have a feeling that it's only almost a question of time.
Yeah, and I'm not sure 100 feet of space would do much. The cedar is the host species, and then there's a cycle where the pest affects the apples, the fruit of the apples, and then it goes back to the cedar tree. There are some new varieties that are, in theory, disease resistant and pest resistant in this case to cedar apple rust, they're worth trying with. Fruit trees, though, it's you know, oftentimes 3 to 5 years out just trying new variety. So Macintosh might be one that is harder to grow in this area. And some of the newer disease-resistant varieties like Pristine or Liberty or Freedom might be worth a shot.
Environmentalist and professional gardener Guinevere Higgins, as well as environmentalist and professional farmer Dave O'Neill, are our guests. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. On Facebook, this is from TJ, who says, we live in South Boston, Virginia, a residential area that is overrun by rabbits. Short of getting a cat, is there any way to deter these rabbits from our outdoor herb garden? Chicken wire just isn't working. Don't know if they've tried talcum powder.
Well, yeah. Maybe the talcum powder, the human hair. We haven't talked about coyote urine yet today,
no.
But it was bound to come up.
Now we have.
Now we have. No, check that off the list. I
realize that every time we talk about pests and that subject comes up, that Dave winces. But there are people who haven't ever heard one of these shows when the two of you were here before. So it will be news to them that coyote urine is something that people...
It can be used as a deterrent for pests that would be predated by coyotes. If they smell that coyote urine, they'll hopefully stay away from your garden. But, sometimes what happens with these strategies, too, is eventually the pests are motivated by hunger, which is a pretty driving force. So they will kind of figure out that... Well, maybe it's either worth taking the risk and seeing if the coyote comes after them, or maybe there's actually not a coyote. So, sometimes these things run their course. You know, dryer sheets, ivory soap. I've heard a lot of, different sort of fragrances that are associated with humans and predaceous animals can have an impact. But
so there's all kinds of things to experiment with in addition to chicken wire that you're suggesting.
Yeah, TJ, and I'm curious why the chicken wire hasn't worked. Is it because they're getting under the chicken wire? It could be worth burying the chicken wire, or...
We've used electric net fence before.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great strategy.
Specifically for rabbits, and I've seen more rabbits this year than I've ever seen on our farm, so I don't know if that's true in different areas.
TJ, I hope one of those solutions might work. Avery in Harrisonburg may just be our last call. Avery, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I'm moving in a few weeks, and I have a couple of moon vines that I'd like to transplant to my new house. I'm wondering if it's at all possible to do that when it's this hot outside.
Oh, it's definitely a rough time to do any transplanting. Moon vine, I'm not specifically familiar with, although I know that moon vine is easy enough to get established. Are you talking about... is it a Datura, or is it a Brugmansia, or is it one of the more annual moonflowers, like something in the blanking
Go
on
ahead,
the name.
David. I don't know.
Jump in anytime. Is it something you started from seed?
Mm-hmm.
It is. Okay, so they're easy to get established. They're in. This will come to me as soon as you get off the phone. They're in the Morning Glory family. So they are easy enough to get established by seed. They're also quite invasive, so just keep that in mind. You might want to keep it in a pot. But I would say, they're easy enough to get established. When you move, you might just pick up a new seed packet and start some new ones.
Great. Thank you.
Avery, thank you so much for your call. Back to Chris, who was our questioner on Facebook early in the hour about his basil plants turning yellow on the leaves. He had another question that lots of people probably want to know the answer to. It says, it's midsummer now. If I wanted to add a few containers to my Dex vegetable garden, is it reasonable to start some new plants at this time of year? And if so, what's the best place to buy such plants?
It's quite reasonable to start plants at this time of the year. We do lots of rotations on the farm because we want a consistent supply of things. We're still going to have two more rotations of squash. And we're just getting all our fall vegetables started. So July, even though it's this hot, is the time to start all our fall vegetable rotations like kale and cabbage and collards. And
Swiss chard, lettuces, cucumbers. I would totally recommend doing another rotation of cucumbers. They tend to not love the heat of the midsummer, but when it starts to maybe taper off a little bit, they'll get a little more productive.
It will cool off a little bit. I know it feels like it's never gonna cool off. But in August, there's a lot less daylight than in June and July. So in August, even though the temperatures stay hot, it's easier to grow some of these plants because there's less daylight.
And we wanted to put in a plug for fall gardening because right now when we're in the thick of the intense heat and the intense drought and all the bugs are out, it's so nice to think about, gardening when it's 65 degrees out, when there's not as many pest problems, when oftentimes you don't even have to water because whatever natural rainfall comes, oftentimes it's enough just because it's so cool. There's not as much evaporation. So fall is a fantastic time to garden. And so we hope that folks listening out there will consider planting a fall garden this year.
Anything in particular to be doing to prep for that now, or just imagining how good it's going to feel? 3 months from now.
Well, like Dave said, sowing seeds in flats to get your transplants ready, so that, you know, maybe come mid to late August, you're ready to set out those crops. You know, there's a lot of things you can grow in the fall, root crops like beets and carrots, onions, leeks,
turnips,
radishes, leaf crops like Swiss chard and lettuce and kale and arugula.
So Chris was wondering in his question where to buy such plants.
Yes.
And it's harder to find fall transplants than it is spring transplants. You still are in the time window where you can do some seeding in flats. You can buy a seed packet. I don't know. Do you know of any?
I'm starting to see, you know, in the 3 years I've had my business, it used to be really difficult to find starts in the fall, and now it's a lot easier. I think the nurseries are picking up that people want to be growing this stuff in the fall. So check your local nursery, ask for it, and they might be able to plan to get some starts for you.
And
we have no time left, so tell me really quickly, if you would, David, where people can find you at farmers markets.
Oh, yes. We're every week at the Saturday Market in Harrisonburg, the Harrisonburg Farmers Market, as well as the Charlottesville City Market on Saturday and Farmers in the Park in Charlottesville at Mead Park every Wednesday.
Our guests have been Guinevere Higgins, professional gardening advisor and co-owner of the Charlottesville-based consulting firm Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest, as well as Dave O'Neill, organic farming specialist and co-owner of the Radical Roots Community Farm in Keezeltown. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom.
Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from Dan Easley. Good to have him back, even if it's just for today, but we'll try and get him back again soon. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.